Margaret Atwood is the author of The Handmaid's Tale and many other novels. She's just come out with her first collection of poetry in more than a decade, and it's called Dearly. We recently published in The New Yorker a poem of hers called Flatline.
Flatline. Things wear out, also fingers. Gnarling sets in. Your hands crouch in their mittens. Forget chopsticks and buttons. Feet have their own agendas. They scorn your taste in shoes and ignore your trails, your maps. Ears are superfluous. What are they for, those alien pink flaps? Skull fungus. The body, once your accomplice, is now your trap. The sunrise makes you wince, too bright, too flamingo. After a lifetime of tangling, of knotted snares and lacework, of purple headspace tornadoes with their heart race and rubble, you crave the end of mazes and pray for a white shore, an ocean with its horizon. Not so much bliss, but a flat line you steer for. No more hiss and slosh. No reefs, no deeps, no throat rattle of gravel. It sounds like this.
That's Margaret Atwood reading Flatline. She'll talk about the poem in her new collection, Dearly, with poetry editor Kevin Young on the next episode of The New Yorker's Poetry Podcast.
Is it silence that it sounds like? Blankness?
That's right.
or is it mystery?
Well, both. I think silence always has mystery in it, because being us, we're waiting for what sound is going to come in to fill that silence. What's going to happen next? That is the way we are.
Do you feel like it's befriending silence in the poem, or befriending this process, or is it complaining, or both?
Oh, no, I think it's acknowledging.
Uh-huh. I think it's defiant too, though. There's something about it. Skull fungus, one of my favorite lines.
Is it?
that is sort of playful too. It isn't simply, you know, conceding. What do you think?
I don't know. I don't think it's particularly defiant, except insofar as writing a poem about something you may not particularly wish for is defiant.
That's from the New Yorker Poetry Podcast, hosted by Kevin Young. You can subscribe wherever you go for podcasts. I'm David Remnick, and that's our program. I want to thank you for joining us. See you soon.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of TuneYards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
Later today on This American Life, when I was 25 years old, this is how I sounded on the radio.
And now, true to life, adventure stories.
That was not good. Which is normal for 25. This week on our show, to kind of commemorate the 25th year that This American Life's on the air, we have stories of 25-year-olds making their way in the world. It's later today.
This American Life, today at 5 p.m. on KCRW Berlin.
A reclusive widow has created a fantastical world all her own.
Believe me, Helen, when I saw your Mecca for the first time, I just stood there and gaped.
The Road to Mecca by Athol Fugard, next time on L.A. Theatre Works.
Catch L.A. Theatre Works, Sunday nights at 7 on KCRW Berlin.
Hi, I'm Eric Kirschbaum, and you're listening to KCRW Berlin on 104.1 FM. Stay tuned for more news and information in English.
Hi, this is Josh Barrow, host of Left, Right, and Center and All the President's Lawyers. I'm sad to say farewell to all of our KCRW Berlin listeners, but this doesn't have to be goodbye forever. Keep listening to our shows and stay connected to KCRW's signature mix of news, music, and culture at kcrw.com or on any podcast app. Thank you for listening to KCRW Berlin.
A new phase in the fight against COVID-19 has begun. We'll tell you about it.
Distribution has begun. Right now, boxes are being packed and loaded with vaccine with emphasis on quality control.
For Saturday, December 12th, it's All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Martin. We'll also ask, how should Americans grieve the loss of the hundreds of thousands already lost to COVID?
This was a national tragedy, and that, you know, people's lives were lost, and as a country, we were forever impacted.
And a podcast explores how the criminal justice system in New Orleans changes lives in and out of prison.
I committed a drug crime. We can't vote. So I feel left out. I'm left out.
But first, this news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Nora Rahm. The U.S. is embarking on a nationwide mission to distribute Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. Trucks loaded with containers are to leave the company's facility in Kalamazoo, Michigan, Sunday, heading for distribution centers. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports there are many challenges.
This vaccine needs to be kept at ultra-cold temperatures. That's colder than winter in Antarctica, minus 70 degrees Celsius. You need special freezers for that, and Pfizer made these special shipping containers that look kind of like a pizza box that can be kept cold with dry ice for a couple of weeks. But you also need to thaw and dilute the vaccine before administering it. You also have to give a second dose 3 weeks later. It is a lot. It is very, very complicated.
NPR. Selena Simmons-Duffin. The Wisconsin Supreme Court heard early oral arguments Saturday in a lawsuit brought by President Trump's campaign seeking to overturn that state's election results. Wisconsin Public Radio's Sean Johnson has more.
Trump asked the Wisconsin Supreme Court to throw out more than 220,000 ballots cast in Dane and Milwaukee counties. Justice Jill Karofsky noted during arguments that they're the state's most urban counties, the most diverse, and the most Democratic. She told a lawyer for Trump that the lawsuit smacks of racism and undermines the idea of self-governance in America.
And what you want is you want us to overturn this election so that your king can stay in power. And that is so un-American.
The Wisconsin Supreme Court could decide the case at any time. A federal judge rejected Trump's other Wisconsin lawsuit on Saturday. For NPR News, I'm Sean Johnson in Madison.
Thousands of supporters of President Trump gathered in Washington, D.C. Saturday to support his baseless claim he won the presidential election. Among the speakers was former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who was pardoned by Trump after being convicted of lying to the FBI. Relatives of Jacob Blake Jr., a black man severely wounded by a police officer in Kenosha, Wisconsin, are pressing for criminal charges filed against the officer. From member station WUWM, Chuck Hornbach has more.
Officer Rustin Shesky shot Blake on August 23rd when attempting to take the 29-year-old into custody. A few nights of violent protest followed, and both President Donald Trump and Democratic challenger Joe Biden visited the city. Kenosha County District Attorney Mike Gravely says he's reviewing a massive amount of evidence about the case, but Blake's uncle, Justin Blake, says the family is getting frustrated with the prosecutor.
You can be meticulous to a fault, you know? And I think we're at the border of being meticulous to a fault.
Gravely told the Kenosha News a few days ago that he's making steady progress on the review. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
And you're listening to NPR News. Heads of state and government from more than 70 countries attended a virtual conference Saturday to mark the fifth anniversary of the Paris Climate Accord, to promise greater efforts in reducing greenhouse gases. President Trump had withdrawn the U.S. from the agreement, which has been ratified by most countries around the world. President-elect Joe Biden said Saturday the U.S. will rejoin the agreement on day one of his presidency. Country music singer Charlie Pride died Saturday in Dallas at the age of 86. Texas Public Radio's Jerry Clayton has more.
Pride's publicist said the singer died of complications from COVID-19. Born to a sharecropper family in Mississippi, Pride rose to fame to become country music's first black superstar and the first black member of the Country Music Hall of Fame. He was best known for his hits such as Kissin' Angel Good Morning and Is Anybody Going to San Antone?
Going to San Antone or Phoenix, Arizona.
He also won multiple Grammy Awards and had 52 top 10 country hits. His last performance was on November 11th at the CMA Awards in Nashville. I'm Jerry Clayton in San Antonio.
The Fame 21 Club in Midtown Manhattan is closing indefinitely. It opened during Prohibition in 1930 and became a gathering place for celebrities. It had shut down in March because of the pandemic. Now the owners say there are no immediate plans to reopen, but they are exploring potential opportunities. That the 21 Club will always remain an important social and cultural hub in New York. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Zimmel Family Foundation, supporting Shatterproof, a national nonprofit dedicated to ending the devastation of addiction and transforming treatments in America. Learn more at shatterproof.org.
Say you have a baby.
Did you see the owl?
You raise her with love.
One day I'm going to be able to tell her, you can do this. Push yourself.
The kid's going to turn out exactly as you planned, right?
Yeah.
Hold on here. It would be nice if life was like that, but life isn't like that. Life is hard.
Are we bound by our DNA? Or can a parent change it? That's on the next Radio Lab.
Sundays at noon on 104.1 KCRW Berlin.
Edition of All Things Considered was previously recorded at 2 a.m.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. One COVID vaccine authorized for emergency use in the United States and more in the pipeline. That's the hopeful news today as public health officials all over the country prepare to launch a massive immunization campaign. This, of course, is just the beginning of that campaign, and we'll hear the latest details a bit later in the program. We want to start, though, with an acknowledgement of the pain the virus has already caused and will likely continue to cause for months before the pandemic can be brought under control. At the current pace, the U.S. will reach another staggering milestone within a matter of days, 300,000 people dead from COVID-19 since the pandemic began. That's nearly 100 times the number of people killed in the 9/11 attacks. So we wanted to spend a few minutes today thinking about how the country should acknowledge the tremendous toll the COVID crisis is taking. And given how divided the country has been over responses to the crisis itself, whether to wear masks and how much to disrupt daily activities and so forth, we're wondering how, indeed if, the country can find a way to grieve together. We're going to discuss that now with Kristen Urquiza. She lost her father, Mark Anthony Urquiza, to the pandemic earlier this year. Since then, she's formed a nonprofit group called Marked by COVID that has led vigils to grieve for the lives lost to the virus. The group describes its mission as elevating the truth about COVID to save lives. Kristen Urquiza, thank you so much for being with us once again. And of course, once again, I do want to say I'm so sorry for the loss of your dad.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me here. And I appreciate those condolences. It's been a really difficult time. But, you know, we are doing our best to continue to push forward to help, create a space for folks to grieve in this really difficult time.
Also joining us is Sally Lynch. She is with Tuesday's Children. That's a group formed in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks to help families affected by that tragedy and has since expanded its mission to help heal communities and families recover from tragedy all over the world. Sally Lynch, thanks to you as well